Welcome along to the Design Ops Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Johnson, and this week we're continuing the conversation we started last week with Lily Dart. Diversity and inclusion is a big focus of yours. It's something I'm keen to include in all of the conversations that I have on the podcast. So first of all, just to set a baseline for the conversation, we know it's a problem in tech, particularly in the UK, that a lot of workplaces are predominantly young, white, male, straight, non-disabled. What's the problem with that?
What's the problem with it? Well, I think we, there are lots of examples of how technology is beginning to backfire on us through lack of diversity in our teams, right? So we can see this with some of the AI tools that get generated. I actually ended up oddly being on BBC Radio talking about Elon Musk a few weeks ago when Twitter was at its height chaos. And I started talking about one of these things, actually, and I started talking about, I think probably all of us listening to this podcast will know these sorts of stories, but light sensors that don't work for darker skins, for example. And somebody actually was listening, and they ended up emailing in to the host of the show going, this has happened to me. I'm a normal person living my life, listening to late night BBC Radio. And this has happened to me. Like, I have been in situations where I've not been able to engage with light sensors because I have darker skin. And so this stuff still happens. There's still technology out there that, works like this or fails to work like this. Mm-hmm. I think we see people like, Elon Musk as an example, who come in with an awful lot of power. We've given that man a lot of power in ways that he is actively trying to deconstruct the security, the small amount of security and safety kind of mechanisms that have been put around Twitter in order to meet his own kind of political interests. We see him being transphobic. We see him doing all sorts of things. And you know what? The tech industry created Elon.
Well, that's absolutely.
We are the ones. This industry is the one that has let him thrive. And I think we now start to see, having done this for 20 to 30 years, we start to see the impacts of what does this mean? What sort of decisions is AI making for us? You look at things like ChatGPT, and while I don't think we've seen massive concerns about inclusion specifically come out of ChatGPT, you can see how powerful that will be. That if it starts to misrepresent things, if we start to give it more control than we should, or similar GPT-like technology, you can see where the path of that lies. When you think that some insurance decisions, for example, are made automatically based on people's level of income or the color of the skin, whether or not they're disabled, that's why fundamentally in kind of the health of the world, that's why a lot of this stuff is concerning. But I also think we can look at it from a kind of individual perspective of everyone deserves the same level of respect, really.
Of course,
and
they do.
We often don't create those spaces for people. Our inclination is, and it's often my inclination, right? It's the way that I make cases in businesses, is to talk about the impact on the business. Don't want the bad PR of releasing this particular piece of technology and having this backlash. Events company, you don't want the bad PR of this thing happening. And I will talk about that a lot. But ultimately, I think it's useful for us all, myself included, to remind that while there are serious impacts everywhere, but actually we also just need to think about our empathy for the individual in these situations as well.
Absolutely. I think for me it's important, particularly in design, right? Because we're solving problems for everyone, right? And if our workforce doesn't have that diversity, our views, ideas and solutions to those problems become very homogenized, right?
Very well said.
Right then. So how do we ensure a diverse workforce and an inclusive workplace when we're building our teams?
It's a really tough one. I think there are lots of things that we can do and that we can do as individuals that will improve the situation. And I've been through very different sets of behaviours with this myself. Mm-hmm. You tend to find that those of us who are more active in advocacy are the people who are more directly affected by problems of lack of diversity and inclusion in organizations. So I mentioned that I'm disabled, I'm neurodivergent, I'm gay. I also, just early on in my career, even before I came out, I was just a woman in tech, right? Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, with everyone around me being a dude. And that was enough in and of itself to kind of get me to start to proactively kind of engage with some of these topics and see if I could bring organizations along on a journey. And my response to that individually was to start going, oh, yeah, of course I'll run your diversity and inclusion programs. Yeah, of course I'll do this extra piece of work to do this thing. Yeah, I'll go and run this external event to get more people engaged in this topic. Mm. You know, yes, I'll do all of this extra kind of reading and engagement. And what I did was put an additional massive workload on myself for a large chunk of my career. And I've now sort of come out the other side of that to go, I still very much care about this stuff and I strongly advocate for it. But I have started saying to organizations when they go, oh my God, you've done diversity and inclusion work, would you like to go and run this diversity program? I will now say, no, absolutely, I will not do that. Here is the name of an excellent company that I've worked with before who will come in and do this work for you, who are trained, and I'm not trained, you know, and they do it as their full-time job. And they, you know, have got PhDs in this stuff. They know, you know, the legal HR policies for the countries they work in. You know, there's a bunch of different things there. What I am is a well-read individual that does this, you know, as a side job. And you should not be entrusting your diversity and inclusion work to me in and of myself. But I think it's interesting that I had to go through phases of burnout to kind of get to that realization that it wasn't appropriate for actually the organizations that I was working with or me as an individual to be doing that work, because it's a massive responsibility that takes quite a lot of, you know, emotional support, to be honest. You hear awful stories, and a lot of very distressed people will come to you and tell you the kind of problems that they're having. Yeah. And no untrained individual is equipped to do that kind of work. So I think which brings me back to what can we do about that? I think what we should be doing is really reflecting on any given individual has got a limit in what they know about diversity and inclusion, right? Mm-hmm. And that is different for a white straight dude than it is for me as a queer disabled white woman than it is for a black woman or a black trans woman.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All of us have some kind of limit in our ability to understand. And when you get properly trained diversity and inclusion professionals, they are trained to know the theory around these different things. They are trained to know theoretically when they should engage with other different types of specialists. They are trained to understand the limits in their knowledge and the limits of what they know as an individual versus what they know of systemic impacts, right? All of this is a kind of big melting pot of stuff that we get into when we get into diversity and equity and inclusion work. Yeah. So this is not to say that we shouldn't advocate for it. We absolutely need to advocate for it. But over my career, I've become more cautious of putting myself in the driving seat as an untrained professional, you know, to be able to be entirely responsible for this work. What I have done is started being very explicit with organizations about that and, you know, cultivating relationships with organizations who can come in and do the work, who are the right types of organizations.
Yeah.
I have started putting limitations on who I will engage with. You know, so I as a manager have the power to say, am I going to work with that agency often? You know, am I going to go and speak at that event? You know, all of these are things as an individual that I can make personal individualized decisions about, sure. You know, who I support, depending on their policies and approaches and their behavior. And I can withdraw those that support at any time as well. So that's where my focus has gone to. It's less about how can I, you know, fix the world for everyone else, although I very much will try to do that for my team members. You know, if someone comes to me with a concern, I will fight to the death in many cases to try and improve that situation. But really it's about looking at our individual responsibility in these situations, I think. And for those of us who aren't affected by the kind of lack of inclusion in tech, it is about vocally standing up for, you know, where are the actions? Organizations, show me where the actions are that you are taking to make this better for other people. Don't ask me to do it, you know, that's okay. But like, you know, where are holding organizations accountable to their action or inaction in these spaces? And I still don't see enough of that in the tech industry, in the design industry. I still don't see enough of people holding organizations to account.
No.
And I think that's where we can make progress as individuals moving forwards. And that's even without getting into actually what do you design and what impact does that have on your customers or users.
Awesome. I've been making a point that I want to make these episodes nice and short, like 25 minutes, half an hour. We've gone way over that. And I did the other week, I spoke to Andy Budd, and it's super interesting. So whether I leave this full length or chop it into two, I'm not sure yet. But there's one last point I just want to touch on, particularly because one of the things I know you focus on. I've got a 16-year-old daughter who's currently deep in her A levels. And we had a conversation about a year or so ago when she was not sure what she wants to do, because who is at that age, right? And I was like, well, maybe come and spend the day with me at work and explore all the different roles in agency world, because there's more than designers and developers there and stuff, and have a look at the tech industry. And she screwed her face up and said, they're jobs for boys. And I was like, I was gobsmacked that in this day and age, right, kids are still coming through school with those beliefs.
Wow.
So I'm super interested to ask and hear more about this. You're on the advisory board for a thing called Innovate Her UK. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Innovate Her is a really lovely organisation that really just helps more women, but really any kind of young person from underrepresented groups to see a future in tech exactly as you just described. How do we make sure that people see this as a viable career, and that kids have access to knowledge around what they could do. So Innovate Her in particular, like their kind of roots and heritage is in going into schools and running training programs. And they do that in schools typically, but in some other places as well, but really building relationships with schools. And then also working with tech organizations to help them improve their diversity with the adults that they hire. Mm-hmm. And usually trying to make a connection between those two things. So if you can build a relationship with a young person coming all the way up through their A-levels, into university or possibly skipping university, can you create a pipeline straight into some of these larger organizations where they've got a better ability to support apprentices or interns or juniors or whatever it is you're trying to kind of pipeline people into. And they've been doing this for a few years. They're a beautiful, beautiful, lovely, really caring organization with a real passion for the work that they do. And I think part of what they do in that making the possibilities of tech visible is we do things like, this is an introductory kind of UX course. One of the courses, last time we had a board meeting, one of the courses we were talking about was like UX for good, like tech for good and kind of design for good. Okay. So beyond kind of the basic UX skills, how do you then take that into, doing that for a kind of good and ethical purposes as a very kind of baby starting point. And so they do really excellent work. And really we kind of meet up once a quarter, maybe slightly more regularly, to look at how they're approaching their work, what progress they've made, and to advise. There's an amazing, it was mostly women on the leadership board. It's a really lovely group of people, some really frighteningly powerful, amazing business people who say things I would just never have thought of for one minute. But I'm really there to kind of help from the design perspective, the research perspective. I've also worked with kind of government and local government and to some degree schools and things like that in the past. But really what we're trying to do is make that offering stable over time. So they did have to move a lot online in a short period of time, obviously over COVID. And now we are working out, what is the kind of future offering for that. Some of it will absolutely continue to be online. How do we get back into schools in the right way? But I do think organizations like this are really critical, particularly because, as you say, particularly for low income kids who might not always have the same access to technology. Organizations like this are critically important in order to pipeline the right set of people, those diverse groups of people into organizations as adults. But we do have to remember part of the reason that Innovate Her works with the organizations themselves as well is that we have to remember that more women and people from minoritized groups go into tech than stay in tech, right?
Right.
So, I think I might be wrong, but I think academia has a similar effect where you push people up through the funnel. And actually a lot of people drop out because we don't create good environments for those individuals to work in. And that's why Innovate Her also tries to look at it from sort of both ends of the pipeline. But they are just one organization, and one organization can't change all of the culture of tech. And so I think as we're talking about diversity and inclusion, and trying to engage more people in that's the impact, right? When individual designers are managers 20 years later, and they're going, wow, why are there no women I can hire? Why are there no people of color I can hire? Why can't I seem to hire anyone who's disabled? Like, yeah. We all contributed to that environment as came up through the ranks, so you don't just get to manager and go, oh, it's really confusing that none of these people are here. They were there, probably. They probably started their career at the same time you did, but you carried on and they left, right? And that's really where I think all of us who are more grown up adults need to be having a look at how we are contributing day to day to kind of toxic work environments, but where organizations like Innovate Her have a really important task of bringing us the right people over time that hopefully we can continue to create better environments for, which has always been my goal as a manager of how do I create a safer space than I had when I was coming into some of the earlier stages of my career, and how can I keep on pushing for little bits of improvement, and that I'm not the manager and it's not the business or the company that means that person goes, I can't be in tech anymore, like I can't work here anymore. I don't want to be that person, and I want someone to have a good enough experience that they know that if they find themselves in that moment, if they find themselves going, I hate this so much, I don't want this career anymore, that actually maybe previously they had a good experience and they know this isn't how it has to be. Because that's a very different mindset to I've always had bad experiences, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will link to that in the show notes. I think it's a fantastic initiative. Hopefully it will help girls coming through the education system realize that there's more than jobs for boys in tech, right?
Yeah, that is shocking.
I was gobsmacked. Anyway, where can people find out more about you?
Great question. I'm not going to say that I have a functional website right now, because if I'm honest, it's been a little while. But Twitter tends to be the place that I am. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn as well, but LinkedIn is painful. So probably best place to find me is lily_dart, so D-A-R-T, on Twitter.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been great speaking to you, Lily. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Sean.